This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, May 18th, 2018. I'm Caleb Brown. In Brazil, the corruption and the scandal known as Operation Car Wash is still coming to light, and one of the many judges who've helped bring to light the scale of this corruption is Sergio Moro. At the Milton Friedman Prize for Advancing Liberty dinner in New York this week, Moro was interviewed by Wall Street Journal columnist Mary Anastasia O'Grady.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our conversation with Judge Moro. We're very lucky to have him with us here this evening. And I want to let you know that in preparing for this event, I started reading through the press clips of the last 4 years of the work that you were doing and the prosecutors were doing in Brazil. And I was reminded of Mark Twain's observation that truth is stranger than fiction. But it's because fiction is obliged to stick to the possibilities, and truth isn't. And if you read what happened in Operation Car Wash, it really is a truth that is way stranger than fiction in a country, I would say, that is enormously important for the region. So the changes that Judge Moro has brought about, I think, have big implications for the rest of Latin America. Just to summarize for those of you who aren't lucky enough to have a Wall Street Journal subscription, basically what was going on here was that Petrobras, the big oil company, state-owned oil company, was awarding contracts to private construction companies, and those construction companies were padding their bids. And so Petrobras would give the contract to the construction company. The construction company would give kickbacks to oil company executives, to politicians, to some of the members of the corporations. And as we know, it ended up also going to former President Lula da Silva, who is now in jail. He was originally convicted for 9 years, but on appeal, he got 12 years. And I should add also that money was also being funneled through offshore corporations into political slush funds. So it was also being kicked back into the party. Now, Operation Car Wash as a novel would be rejected by a publisher as way too fantastic. But in terms of what's actually gone on in Brazil, I think one of the most interesting things are the human beings who made this happen. So you are a trial judge in Brazil, slightly different system than we have here in the US. But there's also a team of prosecutors. And that team of prosecutors has been called sometimes in the press the nine horsemen of the apocalypse. Because this scandal truly rocked the entire political, economic core of this huge country. And I thought that it would be interesting to hear from you. What was it about those human beings? I mean, you've had trial judges and prosecutors in Brazil for 30 years in the democracy, in the post-military government democracy. But this seemed like a very special collection of people, and both in terms of their education, their training, but also their values. And so do you have any insights about how these people ended up coming together and following this trail and basically opening the web of corruption?
Well, first, let me say briefly, I'm honored to be here to receive this invitation, and thank you for the kind words. And I like the video. it's a pleasure to have you here also, Ms. O'Grady. It's difficult to say. Let me say that it's all institutional work. Of course, there are individual merits, but the investigation, the procedures, and the results achieved until now are a consequence of an institutional framework. Prosecutors, police officers, my work as a judge, in part, I have some merit of, but there are the work of appeal judges, of the superior courts in Brasilia. What is really interesting is that We had in Brazil several criminal scandals in the past, but usually we read about them only on newspapers. And that cases, sometimes they were never brought to the courts, or when they were brought to the courts, nothing happened. And things start to change. Maybe since an important decision by our Supreme Court in 2012 in another criminal scandal called Mensalão. Mm-hmm. And I understand that this car wash operation is a kind of a follow-up of this precedent by the Brazilian Supreme Court. So in an unprecedented manner, now we have about, considering the cases already tried, 33 cases, we have about 150 persons convicted for bribery and money laundering in Brazil. And these convictions involved very powerful people, businessmen, owners, and executives of these Brazilian construction companies, executives of Petrobras, and also high-ranked politicians, like the former Speaker of the House, congressmen, senators, and even a former president of the country.
Well, so I guess what you're saying then is that there's almost a generational change in the judicial branch. I'm wondering, what kind of impact is this having in the political class? I mean, you get a sense from looking at this that bribery was the sort of the status quo. I mean, it was a sort of a natural thing that politicians engaged in. Do you see some kind of giant shift in the way that politicians will behave going forward, or is it going to just be a constant inch-by-inch battle?
Well, reducing the impunity and sending important criminals by due process to prison, suffering the consequences of their criminal behavior. I understand this is an important step. And in time, we will have, probably I cannot foresee the future, less levels of corruption. In truth, some of the criminals who made plea agreements or confessed their crimes, they told us that paying bribes was a kind of the rule of the game. The rule of the game on Petrobras contracts was that you have to pay bribes to have the contract, and a share of the bribes stayed with the executives of Petrobras, which is a state-owned company, and the other part went to the politicians. I have infinite hope that this could change, this culture of graft. But I cannot foresee the future, but I have a really hope that people will understand. And in certain way, this reveals that Brazilian democracy is strong. The institutions are working. Mm-hmm. And if you allow me, I usually like to quote a phrase from former President Theodore Roosevelt. He made a very strong speech against corruption in 1903 before the United States Congress. And I'll not quote entirely, but he said once, the exposure of corruption, the exposure and the punishment of corruption is an honor to a nation, not a disgrace. The shame lies in toleration, not in correction. And I understand that this is the feeling, this is my feeling, and this is the feeling of the vast majority of Brazilian people who have a chance to build stronger commitment to the rule of law and to democracy.
Well, that's interesting. You know, the other player in all of this were the construction companies. And we were talking earlier about the fact that Petrobras has recognized $2 billion in bribes in this scandal. And surely the number is higher than that if you include all of the other scandals that are connected to this. But one of the big companies was Odebrecht, which is a construction company. And I was fascinated to read that Odebrecht had its own department of bribery. So I wondered when I read that, and of course OAS also got into trouble, what kinds of changes do you think you might see in corporate governance in Brazil as a result of this? Is that area being affected at all by this?
I believe so. I'm hearing a lot in Brazil about compliance and the necessity to have real compliance on these giant corporations and big corporations. And although these big construction companies, as Odebrecht, as Andrade Gutierrez, although they committed various serious crime at the past, at least after some time, after shutting down the department for bribes, that was a surprise for us also. And you know, just one thing, until I finish the other story, it was amazing because this department for bribes worked even during the investigation. And they even paid the new CEO of Petrobras, who was put on charge to clean the company. I can speak about it because it's a case already tried. Of course, as a judge, I cannot speak about pending case. But, they have done was shameful. They commit a lot of crimes, not only in Brazil, but it was discovered that they also paid bribes in other countries. Peru is an example, but there are others. And Peru, I think, is really doing a good job to build their own case. But during the investigation, they decide to make lenient deals with the prosecutors. In these lenient deals, they recognize their wrongdoings. They assume the compromise to pay fines, millions, billions in fines, and to cooperate with the investigations and to change their behavior. So even for them, for these companies, and I think that's very important when a company is involved in criminal behavior, that it recognizes their wrongdoings, it changes their behavior. Even for them, there is a hope.
Mm-hmm. Even for them. One of the things that was very important in your investigation, I understood, was preventative detention and plea bargaining. And some of your critics said that, they criticized you for using preventative detention, which it seemed to me like turned out to be very effective. But there's also a potential for abuse with preventative detention and plea bargaining. Can you make some comments about how the Brazilian system is set up to protect against the abuse of maybe a judge that just is ambitious or political or something like that?
Yes, that's a very good question. There have been some concerns about pretrial detentions, and you're absolutely right. I think pretrial detentions should be an exception in any judicial system. But a lot of countries, Brazil, and even United States, in these countries, it's allowed to the judge to order pretrial detention in exceptional circumstances. So a United States judge could deny bail for a defendant when he understand that he present a risk to the society, to another individual, or for the evidence, or if there is a risk that he will flee. Well, if you look at the specific cases in Brazil, pretrial detention orders were given in special circumstances. For example, the first director of Petrobras, the first executive of Petrobras, who have been arrested by pretrial detention order, he was arrested because it was discovered that he was destroying or hiding paper evidence. By the other side, a lot of these convicted criminals, they hauled millions of dollars or euros in offshore accounts abroad. So there was a risk of a potential flight, mm-hmm. or a risk that they would somehow hide this money. And if you take the example of a company who had a specific department dedicated to paid bribes, well, you need to do something strong. So they understand the message that they could not do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And if they pay bribes even during the investigation, well, that's a risk of new crimes, mm-hmm. and you need to do something. So, but all pretrial order detentions were ordered only when we have strong evidence that those defendants were probably guilty from their crimes. And we don't need to overestimate it. To give it an example, today I have 9 defendants on pretrial detention without conviction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. You have studied, obviously you studied law in Brazil, but you've also studied a short program at Harvard. You did a program on combating money laundering at the State Department. And I've read that you've also taken an interest in reading about the Italian prosecutors who have dealt with organized crime in their own country. Are you optimistic that organized crime can be combated with the will and the tools of a modern liberal democracy? Because it seems like organized crime and transnational crime is growing and becoming more difficult to police, and it's threatening a lot of free societies.
I'm pretty confident that democracies and free societies are the only way to fight organized crime. If you don't have, for example, freedom of press, if you don't have the possibility to communicate to public opinion, if you don't have trials open to the public, it's very difficult. One of the things that I understand that was a key reason to the relative success of the investigation in Brazil was the strong support from Brazilian public opinion, as it was shown at the video. Millions of Brazilians went to the streets to support the investigation and to protest against corruption. And this gave us the necessary strength to go on, to keep going. Because when we have these cases against powerful defendants, powerful businessmen, powerful politicians, there is also a risk that they will try by improper means to obstruct justice. And your tools are transparency and the support of the population, of the people. Of course, no judge will try a case based on public opinion. That's wrong. You have to try the case based on evidence and on the law. But the public opinion is a strong medicine against obstruction of justice. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have time for one more question. So I have my chance to quote Thomas Jefferson, which I think is mandatory here at Cato. Thomas Jefferson wrote about the importance of what he called equal and exact justice to all men of whatever state or persuasion. And, you know, obviously all modern liberal democracies strive for rule of law and equality under the law. I think that's what was so admirable about your investigation, because it was powerful people who were called to account. What do you think the impact of your work in Brazil might have on the rest of the region? Because you look around South America, Central America, it's had this consistent problem with the rule of law more than anything. Even when they tried to do the right things on the economy and on the monetary front, the rule of law is really always just one battle that hasn't been won. And I'm wondering if maybe your work will influence some of other countries in the region. Do you have any insights about that?
Well, let me say first that you are absolutely right. It's all about the rule of law. No one is above the law. That's an important lesson, not only for Brazil, but for other countries, even mature democracies. And all we want is clean government, a clean market, freedom from a corrupted government. I have been in the last 2 years in countries like Argentina, Peru, and Mexico, and I was very well received on these countries, not only by authorities, but by the civil society. And what I see is a strong feeling that things have to change in Latin America. All countries in the region, some of them more, some of them less, have problems, serious problems with corruption and with the enforcement of the law. In certain way, because we also discovered bribes paid by Brazilian companies. Let's not vilify Brazilian companies. Other companies paid bribes as well. But as we discovered that, we share the evidence with these countries, and some of them are building their cases. Some of them are not reacting, I think, in the proper way. And by the other side, there are interesting new cases appearing in some countries in Latin America, and not only there, that are totally independent from our case. It's not only Latin America. You can say about the cases in South Korea and South Africa. So maybe nowadays there is a world movement. I'm not so sure about that, but people in democracy are not anymore tolerating so much corruption. And this is what gives us hope that this could change. This past of impunity in Brazil make a lot of Brazilians believe that it was a kind of natural fate or tropical disease. But it's just cultural weakness. Mm-hmm. And in the democracy, you could change that.
Well, that's a great note to end our discussion on. Please join me in thanking Judge Morrow for being here with us this evening.
Thank you. Sergio Moro is a federal judge in Brazil. Mary Anastasia O'Grady is a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. Find out more about the recipients of the 2018 Milton Friedman Prize for Advancing Liberty, Las Damas de Blanco, at our website, cato.org/Friedman Prize.